Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. And thank you, Will. Oh, yeah. Welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie. We have a very special guest this week, but I'm going to start with an extra little disclaimer. This podcast will be not safe for work because we're discussing pornography. Our guest is Jacob Grady. He is the founder, owner. He is the site FAQU, which you've probably heard of. And if you tell me you haven't heard of it, you're probably lying. For the longest time, it was and it still is a scanlation site, effectively, for hentai, doujinshi, and manga, and they recently took their baby steps into the world of legitimate publishing. And Jacob, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for inviting me, Zach. It's an honor to be here. The first hentai cast, you were just telling me.
Yeah. This is like the first show where we talk about porn. We just haven't done it.
We'll drag out all the perverts from ANN and get them talking.
I already deal with them, so it's I know who they are. So I guess tell us the FAQU story. Like, you know, say like there's a theme park and you have the great moments with Mr. Lincoln, and then next to that is the story of FAQU. what's in that exhibit? What's that story?
What's in FAQU's wild ride?
Yeah.
So let's see. I guess back when I was like 13 or 14, honestly, is when I first started watching anime on Toonami back in the day. Mm-hmm. Back then it was like Gundam Wing and Dragon Ball Z and Tenchi Muyo and Ronin Warriors and stuff like that. And that was my first exposure to anime as anime and not just, you know, some side effect of a Saturday morning cartoon that was secretly from Japan. So around that age, I really got into anime. And as I was going into puberty, I sort of discovered hentai. I think it was Final Fantasy VII specifically that was my first search. Like, oh, Tifa's boobs.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
And that led me down the path, which has brought us here today. In retrospect, we probably need better parental controls.
I think the toothpaste is out of that bottle. I don't know that it's going back in. When did you decide to start the site?
Yeah, so when I was around 18 or 19 years old in college, I was looking for a hentai doujin, a particular one. It was called Only Asuka 2002. I was a big Evangelion fanboy, still am, and Asuka was my favorite character from the show. And I was looking for this one doujin, and back then it was really, really hard to find hentai online that wasn't, you know, full of spyware and ads and all that kind of stuff. And back then you had to, like, vote on top sites and lots of bad stuff. So like I was
back then it was like news groups, right? I mean, you'd have to like go to like Rec Arts, Anime, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, to find
yeah, this and it was like you'd be lucky to find like some pictures or some pages or something. But I was looking for this one and I couldn't find it. And in the process, I sort of saw everything that was wrong with hentai in the West and its whole perception and how it was kind of, you know, it was just viewed as like horses and tentacle monsters and lots of, you know, it sort of had a bad rap back then. And I dreamt up this website, and I was working at the supermarket over the summer, and my job was to just stack vegetables in the produce department all day. It's very monotonous, very boring. And I just dreamt up this website, and in my off time, I would go home and code it. And again, I was watching, I think, Adult Swim or something, because I remember Case Closed being on at like 5 a.m. one night while I was working on it. And I was like, Case Closed is a pretty good show. So I coded it over the summer. It sat on my computer, like the finished website. And I was like, oh, that was a cool little project. I'll never do anything with that. One day I was reading an article and I saw the word FAQU used in it. And I was like, that's a really cool word. And it's slang for the F word. I went and registered the domain. .com was taken, unfortunately. It still is by some spam site or something. I don't know. So I registered the domain. And I was like, what can I do with this? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I made that hentai website, and I put it up. This was my sophomore year of college, I think. And honestly, it just like blew up really, really quickly. I remember being excited when we hit like 30,000 page views.
Oh, jeez.
After like a month or two, and I was like, oh my God, 30,000 page views. I was talking with like my roommates in college, and they're like, whoa, this is so cool.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, it sort of grew from that. The first year or two, it was just me and a couple volunteers running it. And we, you know, back then we had our own scanlation group that was, you know, translating some of the hentai and putting it on Faku. And it grew and grew and grew. And we started doing conventions and panels and, you know, working with companies here in the West. And then we got opportunities to work with companies in Japan. And it just really blew up. So yeah, that's sort of where it came from. Just a love of anime and 2D babes.
Okay. So that's sort of the question. Were you always kind of a porn guy? I mean, were you always sort of open about, yeah, I love this stuff. What's it to you? Like, or like in your daily life, are you fairly like reserved and, you know, super
normal? I'd say I'm fairly reserved. Like I don't necessarily view hentai as just straight, you know, in your face pornography, though obviously it is. I really do view it as art more than anything, and like more of an extension of anime and manga. One of the things that really attracted me to doujinshi in the first place was, you know, you'll be watching an anime and these two characters will get close and there'll be some like climactic kiss or something, or maybe it won't even happen, but there'll be some like little hint that something happened, or some, you know, they had sex or something like that. And what attracted me to doujinshi was it sort of like filled in that gap, like that you left you hanging. And I like to think of it as like the, you know, the deleted scenes sometimes. Because I started off very vanilla in my taste, so very, you know, normal boy-girl romantic kind of stuff, so, yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay, so, I mean, were you dating, like, in college? Like, was that a thing? Was that going on?
I definitely dated I dated throughout college, and some girls I would date who had no idea what hentai was at all, and fortunately, I've always dated pretty awesome people, so they have all been pretty open to it. I'm definitely not the type who's like, yo, hentai is the best, if you don't like it you stink, blah blah blah. But I, you know, I got my figures at home, so if I ever brought someone home, I'd be like, this is my Oscar figure.
Right. Yeah, so in other words, like, for you it's just a part of life, and the people that are in your life, they're cool with it. And I would imagine you have a pretty, like, it that shows you, like, when somebody new enters your life, how cool they are with it kind of dictates to you whether or not they're really going to be part of your life.
Because that's kind of what
you've chosen to do.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, and I think that goes for anything really. If someone is a part of your life and they can't accept some little quirk that you have, you know, they probably shouldn't be a part of your life.
Yeah. I don't ask the question about dating to insinuate that, oh, what are you, some kind of like loveless like loser? I ask because choosing what you've gone to go into must be a social barrier for you. I mean, it must be something you kind of have to, like, when someone asks you what you do, you know, what do you tell them? You know, how close to the vest do you keep that stuff?
Yeah, that's, you know, honestly, that's a pretty good question. In college, I originally started as a computer science major and then switched to English because I wanted to be an English teacher. Okay. And then once Faku was taking off, I was like, oh, I guess I can't be an English teacher ever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, once you decided to attach your real name to it, for sure.
Yeah. You know. And that was a very conscious choice as well. You know, I wanted to show that it wasn't just, I wanted to show that it's okay to be open about sort of your sexuality and the things that you're into. You know, you don't have to be in your face about it, for sure. But when I'm approached, I'll usually say, you know, I publish comic books from Japan or manga from Japan. And if you know, I think it's cool, then I'll kind of go into it.
Well, that's funny, because if you said, like, for a lot of people, if you said, like, well, I publish comics from Japan, and for your instance, they'd be like, oh, can I see a sample? And you show it to them, and they're like, well, this is exactly what I expected this to be. Because it is the stereotype, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, so you publish that tentacle stuff? Yeah. Oh, my God.
You're like, I do, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've had some fun conversations over the years, for sure.
I mean, so you don't see yourself, like, you wouldn't self-identify as a pornographer.
No, I really don't self-identify as a pornographer, for sure. It still shocks me sometimes seeing, like, some of the, like, we just put out a book called Porno Switch, and I was like, oh, man, that's sort of an obscene title. It's porn right in your face. But you know, at the same time, I also really am proud of everything that we put out there, so. But no, I'm not, like, some crazy pornographer. Like, my side project isn't a porn website, like an actual Western porn website.
Right, yeah. So you see yourself more as, at this stage especially, more of a publisher.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So before we get to that, though, we do need to talk about the legality aspect of FAQ. Now, it is in effect a Scanlator site for a long time, and still, like, it's still a Scanlation site.
Yep.
You're effectively publishing material you have no right to, and you're making money off of publishing material that you have no right to any of it. It's illegal what you're doing.
In regards to the uploads that happen on the site, yes. In regards to the stuff we publish, it's all legal licensed.
That I know, yeah, of course. Right, you're doing what Crunchyroll did, right? You're the Crunchyroll of hentai. Right?
I guess essentially,
that's maybe
yeah.
what you're effectively going to eventually become, right? I mean, that's the goal.
So my whole stance on Scanlations and fan subbing is so. There hasn't, over the years, you know, there's Icarus Comics, there's, you know, Project H and Digital Manga, there's Eros Comics. These are all companies that I've, you know, I've been very close with over the years. And the way I've always viewed Scanlations and fan subbing are as a means to build up this audience that would have a very hard time growing otherwise. As an example, How can I phrase this?
Good luck.
Yeah. So I'll start by saying, like, I think Scanlation is a good thing. I think there's a point where Scanlation and fan subbing are no longer necessary, and we're at that point now with fan subbing. I think with Crunchyroll and Funimation and whatnot really coming out and giving us as fans what we wanted, and all we wanted as Scanlators and fan subbers was to get the content as soon as possible, because we just want to consume this content. You know, we just want to be fans.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started talking with these publishers, that was what I said. It was like, I didn't make FAQ because I wanted to, you know, fuck you over or screw you. I made it because I love the things that you're doing. I love these artists. I love these books. I want to read it all. You know, there's just not enough of it. And in the case of hentai, there was none of it. And you have this audience outside of Japan who's just itching, like, who's literally they're creating these groups of people and just translating and scanlating on their own just because they're fans of it. And we want to be a part of your audience, you know, we want to be a part of your market. We don't want to pirate this stuff. It was just the only way that we could be your fans. And that's how I feel Scanlation fan subbing is in general. And with fan subbing, we're at the point now where, you know, fan subbing can sort of cease to be, and that's okay as a fan subber. I think it's okay to move on from that because our job was sort of done. You know, we sort of brought, or we helped build this audience now that can continue past fan subbing, you know. So.
Right. I mean, all the problems with building an audience that way aside, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
outside of the issues of, you know, like if a publisher brings over a title, an older title, it might not get as many sales or whatever because a bunch of people already read it, which is a shame. And we deal with that a lot too. Our first book was, I think, 2 years old that we put out, but it was, you know, it was a pretty big success. So.
Yeah, well, you also have a huge number of people that will never, ever, ever pay for it because they're used to getting it for free.
Yeah.
And they will come up with that the community has given them an army of justifications for getting it for free at all costs. Like, there will always be a reason to not pay for it because the official people didn't get it right in this way or that way or, you know.
Yeah, that's
true. I'm sure you have people who are like, your books aren't good enough for me because of XYZ. I preferred it when the Scanlations were out there.
Yeah, it's interesting being on the other side of it now too, because
sure.
You know, we do see that coming into this as fans and Scanlators first. One of the things we did with our books was I don't know if you've seen a copy of one of our manga, but it mirrors the Japanese edition perfectly. It has the jacket; it's the same size. The paper is this the exact same. It's like this kind of heavy paper, and we did that because. To both avoid that, and because as fans, that's what we wanted, and that's what we thought the material deserved. I actually get sad sometimes when I see a manga get what I think of as a poor English release. It doesn't happen as much anymore, but certainly it used to. And you'd look at something and go, you know, this was my favorite series. You know, I wanted to support this, but you know,
right?
Yeah, it's certainly controversial. But I think. I really want all of the communities to sort of come together and support this. That's what I want.
Well, you're fighting on an even bigger uphill battle because not only are you working inside of the you're coming off of the Scanlator community, you're also dealing with porn, which you know the internet has decimated that economy. It did it long before Faku ever came into being, and continues to do it to this day. You know, the premium porn suppliers all got destroyed by the rise of YouTube-style porn sites.
Yep.
And eventually that'll get destroyed by whatever the next new way to consume this stuff for free is. And so you're dealing with something people not only don't want to pay for because they already have all these attitudes about not paying for it, they're also potentially ashamed to pay for it or don't want it to show up on any kind of a credit card statement, and they're used to getting it for free because that's what the internet is for, right? That's what you use the internet for. That's the canard.
Hey, that's what they say. The internet is for porn.
Right.
I've certainly heard that many times now that we're actually publishing books. You know, it's like, why would I pay for porn is what someone might say. And honestly, it sort of shocked me at first. I was like, because I didn't come off of Scanlating because I wanted to pirate. It was because it was the only way. So I was a little shocked at first when we made the switch and we saw people sort of saying that. But we also see people who are like, oh, my God, this is, you know, incredible that these artists are and authors are finally coming over.
Well, you also had to deal with pretty major charges of mass hypocrisy because you also did a bunch of DMCA takedowns, right?
No, unfortunately, we got blamed for a series of...
I see. Well, tell the story then, so we don't know.
Definitely. So the way this all came about was sort of crazy, actually. So this publisher that we work with, they basically sent takedowns to Faku. They sent takedowns to all of the big websites in our sphere. They sent takedowns to all the Scanlators. You know, very threatening takedowns like, you must remove all of the content that we've published or we're going to sue you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they like for us, for example, they, you know, they knew exactly where we were, who I was, you know, it was very pointed. So what we did was we complied immediately and we said, okay, all of your stuff is removed. You know, we didn't do this again. We didn't do this because we wanted to screw with you. It was because, you know, we're fans. And from that led to the conversation. You know, I approached them and I was like, hey, instead of, you know, ignoring this user base outside of Japan that literally just wants to fap. what if you work with us or, you know, you put your stuff out there, you know, why not release your stuff in English? Why do we have to sort of be in the shadows as your fans, you know, accept us into your community? And they were responsive to that. So, you know, a couple months of negotiating, I flew out to Japan. I met with all these big executives. I made my case, and we were able to walk away with this incredible publishing deal. Absolutely incredible. And we're working with the best artists, period, now. But as a result of that, it was sort of like all of these takedowns happened, and then we started negotiating with them. And then we announced that we would be publishing all these books, and people were like, oh, hey, all of those takedowns must be the result of this Faku publishing thing. It must have been, you know, leading up to that, when really we were just a victim of the takedowns as well. So as a result, we sort of got blamed for some of the residual effects of that. But fortunately, people are starting to realize what actually happened, which is cool.
So how do you account for the Crunchyroll went through something not with the takedowns, but they went through a similar period of transition where they started as a site that was profiting from streaming fan subs and other illegal material, and then transitioned over into a legitimate outlet, eventually becoming, you know, the one of the two largest players in the business. There was a period there, though, in around 2008 when they were starting to go legit and they were yanking down a lot of their fan subs, but not everything. There was a period where they had both legit stuff and fan subs on the site, and you were paying for access to both of them. Obviously, your site is free at this point. You don't have to pay anything to get anything off the site, unless, you know, you're reading something that you publish. Your site is still mostly pirated material.
So, yeah, we're definitely still... We're in the middle of that transition right now.
Well, how long do you see that taking? Because, I mean, how many different publishers will you have to talk to? I mean, if you plan on... This sounds like a years and years long process of, you know, contacting every hentai publisher in Japan.
Well, fortunately, right now, so it's probably a couple months out, to be completely honest with
really?
You, where we sort of make that switch over. And it's this, we are following the Crunchyroll path in that regard. It's not, it was never intentional. It was just, if we pulled, so first off, the publishers and the artists are all fully aware of Faku and what's on Faku and everything. And fortunately, they're pretty smart about it too. They realize that their path to success is with this existing right now. You know, like we might have a doujin of an artist that we're publishing right now, and they're aware of that, and they're like, okay, my doujin's out there. You know, people are reading the scanlation. They'll become fans of me, and then they'll buy the book that we put out. And right now we're in that phase where we're building up a fan base for the artists through, you know, the scanlations that we do and through scanlations that people upload. Because really, Faku's just, you know, a user-uploaded thing. It's sort of a curated upload system where we give permissions to the actual scanlators themselves to upload. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're aware of that, of what Faku is. For the most part, everyone's okay with it, which honestly shocked me as well. And we're coming to the tail end of the process where we're going to make that switch. And we have a really big thing coming up. You know, I haven't actually announced it yet, but I can talk about it here because why not? It's like a week away. We're going to be simul-publishing Comic Zeros and Comic Karakuten, which are the two biggest hentai magazines in Japan. They're the magazines where you walk into 7-Eleven and there's Comic Karakuten. And we're going to be simul-publishing these two magazines with day one English releases of them. So when the magazine hits the store in Japan, we're going to have a few chapters of it in English that day. So that's our next big step. And that when that launches, that's when we're going to make that switch to, you know, all the legal stuff.
So all legal. So everything on the site that is currently a scanlation that you don't have permission to publish will be removed from the site.
That's correct.
And this will be, and so what you'll have on the site at that point is moving forward, you will have these two anthologies, Day and Date, sounds like. And then I guess you'll continue publishing, currently what you publish are sort of anthologies anyway, right?
Yep. So we publish books which are usually a collection of one-shots that appeared in these magazines and appeared in other magazines in Japan.
Right. Okay, interesting. How do you square having spent so many years basically profiting off of this stuff? I mean, is this basically, well, we're just going to make it right and that's the only thing we can do?
Pretty much, yeah. For the longest time, Faku was at a break-even point. And in fact, I had to take out student loans the first 3 years just to pay off server bills on Faku to kind of keep it going. In retrospect, I'm glad I did.
Right.
But... The capital we made, which was only the most recent few years, was able to kick off this business and kick off our publishing team. Because right now we're actually at 12 full-time employees with the addition of the magazine team, which just started about a month or so ago.
Okay.
So we were able to build all of that as a result of this. And in my heart, the best way to remedy the fact that, you know, this was all illegal content up until now is by doing right by the publishers and the artists and everything else.
Are you running into any resistance? Have you talked to any publishers who don't want to work with you because of your past in piracy?
Not in regards to hentai publishers. We have a lot of projects going on sort of on the side. And one or two of the companies were like, come back to us the moment you turn off all the doujin scanlations and we can go forward with this. So outside of the actual manga stuff, there is some resistance, but overall, again, you know, these artists, these publishers, they have Google, they have, if I was an artist and I typed in my name into Google in Japan, the first thing I'm going to see is a scanlation of my work, probably, right. Or maybe an Amazon JP link.
Right. Okay. So they're aware of it. They're willing to work with you once you give up the piracy.
Some companies, yes.
Some. Okay. But there is some resistance.
Yeah, there's resistance out there. Fortunately, not with the things we're directly doing in regards to hentai, manga, and doujinshi. And to sort of play into that, we're bringing Boshi, one of the artists, to Anime Expo, and he's coming out and he's bringing he's working on a doujinshi that hasn't been released in a set like this before, even in Japan. So we picked, he's the author of Peachy Buck Girls, which is a book we put out. And we're bringing him to Japan or to Anime Expo. He's going to have one of his doujins for sale. He's going to do some shirts and some posters for us. We're also bringing another artist who I haven't actually announced yet, but that'll probably come out right before the convention starts. So we're sort of doing everything humanly possible to keep everyone happy. And so far, it's been a success. We're not being pirates for pirates' sake. We're just fans who had no way to consume the content. You know, a lot of these companies just ignored us. I remember some visual novel company just like blocked all American IPs from even looking at their website a couple years ago. I forgot who it was. So it's good to finally, you know, see that end and for them to sort of accept us. And I do give a lot of that credit to, you know, companies like Crunchyroll who sort of opened that door to, okay, there's an audience, and they certainly weren't the first, obviously, but to sort of a different model of consuming this content than we had before.
Right. So I do want to talk about the doujinshi stuff, because that's a different beast. There are two... So people listening maybe aren't familiar with this. Let's pretend there are people listening to this who maybe don't know what the difference is. On Faku, you can find manga, which is original stories that are found in these magazines, anthologies, that's published the standard way. The other thing that you have on the site predominantly is doujinshi, which are fan-created comics that are chiefly sold by the people who make them at places like Comiket and manga markets in Japan. But they're made by fans, they're sold to fans, and usually they're really low print runs, and the artists don't necessarily want anyone to know that they're making this stuff. So a lot of questions that we got and a lot of the questions that I've had is there have been like instances where artists have told you specifically, please don't publish my work. I don't want anyone knowing I made this, right?
We certainly have. Yeah, we talk with artists all the time who someone might upload a scanlation of their doujinshi, and then they send, you know, me an email or someone at Faku, and they say, could you please remove this? I think there was one recently where it had some controversial political message towards China, you know, the animosity there, and they just didn't want it to be out there. You know, it was certainly a one-off for Comiket. So that does happen. In general, the doujinshi scene in Japan, you know, all the anime companies there, you know, are fully aware of all this. And I think that they sort of see it as, again, sort of how we see it with the scanlations on Faku, where the doujinshi scene there can act as an enabler for the audience of those anime and manga that are, you know, legal and running in Japan. It really is interesting, and I don't think the doujinshi scene particularly will take off in the same way in America as it does in Japan, because I think the rights holders here will not be as forgiving to, you know, if some artist came out and just started publishing a bunch of Nintendo hentai I have a feeling Nintendo would shut that down pretty quickly.
Yeah, right. Well, weirdly, like, the culture there is just, it's different. Like, they are very protective.
Yeah.
They're very protective of IP, but they sort of have a blind eye respect for this fan culture that's created around what they're producing. Mm-hmm. So, like, smashing doujinshi culture for them is a bad move. But, you know, over here, it's just totally different. You know, Funimation doesn't want you to be able to walk into a store and buy porno Evangelion comics. Like, they do.
Yeah, they probably wouldn't be happy about that, for sure.
Right. Yeah, right.
It's interesting. I have a friend who lives in Japan. He runs a figure company, actually. It's just a little thing. He does one-off toys and figures. And there's an event he goes to every year where all of the rights holders for the anime, or not all of them, but a good amount of them, say, okay, for this one day only, anyone can make a figure for something that we produce and sell it at this convention, as long as you ask us first. You know, anyone can do it. So he ended up making an Oyasami Poon Poon figure. I probably butchered that name. But it was really, really cool. And I was like, oh, man, like, there's absolutely nothing like that here. Like, you know, we have parody law, which essentially sort of protects an artist who might go and make, like, a naked Sailor Moon or something like that, or even, you know, a Street Fighter, something Western, a parody of something Western. You know, we're sort of protected under that, but you know, who knows? The moment one of the rights holders comes down hard on someone, it might change.
Yeah, I would imagine you would probably lose that court case. Like, if your defense was parody law for pornography, I bet you would probably not get a sympathetic judge or a jury, and that might be a hard time, so to speak. But yeah, well, so in other words, I guess all of this is going away. Like, you're taking all the doujinshi down, right?
Yeah. So, like I said, we're definitely in the middle of that transition right now, and eventually, in regards to Faku, it will only be legal content that we're publishing before the end of the year, for sure.
Okay, so I guess, you know, saying, like, so moving forward, like, I guess every time you get an email from an artist who doesn't want his stuff available on your site, you would just immediately take it down, but very soon that won't be a problem at all.
Exactly,
for
yeah.
you, anyway. It's not certainly not going to stop. Like, there are going to be other sites that pick up all the slack you're leaving behind, so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting seeing piracy of our own works now, and seeing... Because, you know, we release our books uncensored, and it's directly from the artist, all this material. So it's like the penis that artist drew, and then the publisher sort of censored, and then we get it in its rawest format. So now we're starting to see our books get scanlated into other languages. So it's like this dramatic irony here.
Yeah, right. Well, the minute you go legit, someone's going to start robbing you. Like, that's... That's just the way of the internet.
Something like that. For
yeah,
me,
that's
yeah.
just the way of the internet. So one thing I wanted to talk to you about is sort of pornography's place in anime and manga fandom. And, you know, being as close to it as you are, I'm curious, have you seen a change? Because you've been an anime fan for about as long as I have. You said, like, early 2000s?
Yeah, probably late 90s, to be honest.
Yeah, like, so I became an anime fan, like, 96, 97.
Yeah,
and then I turned it into my job in like 99, so I didn't wait very long. But over the years, I feel like doujinshi culture was less of a thing back then, and it's more of a thing now because the industry seems to be directly encouraging it by the fact that there's so much material that is just a tease. And like so much anime and manga is focused on the, oh, they're almost gonna, but they don't. Oh, you can kind of see your boobs, but you don't. Like, yeah. So much anime is produced like that. And I'm wondering, like, do you think it's there's more of it now?
More hentai in general?
Yeah, like, well, more doujinshi. Specifically, like, the doujinshi culture has kind of exploded.
Yeah, it certainly has. And if you look at Comiket numbers of attendance and whatnot, you know, it just gets bigger and bigger every year. And certainly a lot of that has to do with the, you know, the anime... companies in Japan sort of like enabling it, which, you know, I think is fine. A lot of that yeah. fan servicey type show, a lot of fan service shows just for the sake of gratuitous fan service, I personally don't like. But yeah, they're definitely enabling it. It's definitely growing a lot, which is a good thing, I think. I think it's a good thing, yeah.
Well, in a sense, you know, they're creating sort of an ecosystem there where they produce the show, they get the character designer, they make a show that on TV it's all censored, so you can't see like nipples or anything. They that airing is an advertisement to get you to buy the Blu-ray, which has the nipples.
Yeah.
Then you get the Blu-ray, and then you go to Comic Hit and you buy a bunch of comics of these characters doing what you wanted to see them do in the anime.
In the first place, yeah.
Right. So it's kind of an ecosystem there that's very, I think, certainly unique to this material.
It definitely is. And right. I think it's really cool, and it's certainly interesting to say the least, because it's sort of like, it's almost like a, sort of teamwork between the companies and the fans to sort of, you know, make something grow and be popular.
Well, they're making something grow. That's a joke.
It's anyway. A penis.
Yeah, it's a very interesting culture, and I wonder if like a site like yours has been successful as a result of that growth. If it, you know, the emergence of anime fandom online and the emergence of, you know, material that is highly sexualized in a way that encourages fan activity to take it even further. Mm-hmm. That sort of, if you can sort of draw a line between all of these things and the growth of your site.
That's actually a pretty interesting point. I hadn't thought about it quite that way. Yeah, I can certainly see that because, you know, there's definitely a lot more straight fan service anime. Though there's always been, I think, even, you know, all the old robot animes had a lot of kind of like...
Yeah.
And even, actually, looking back, a lot of them were even more sexual or showed more nudity than they do today in a lot of cases.
In some cases. Yeah, I would venture to say that, like, of course, this has kind of always been around, but it just seems like even now more so than ever, the publishers and the people creating these shows and stuff are more a part of that ecosystem than they were in the past.
Yeah,
like, now
definitely.
It seems to be directly encouraging it rather than kind of just turning a blind eye and saying like, yeah, okay, we know you want to see the Gundam lady naked, but whatever. Now they just make a giant robot show where the ladies are half naked all the time. And, you know, they imply a bunch of stuff that never happens in the show, and then it happens in the doujinshi. Like, that's kind of the ecosystem. It's interesting.
It's definitely interesting, and I hope the companies aren't doing it just for the sake of that. It would certainly, I think, demean the product that they're producing if they're just doing it so, you know, a bunch of kids can fap. But there certainly is more of it. There's also lots of shows out there and manga that are just amazing and great for the fact that they're amazing and great, and hentai will even spawn out of those that you wouldn't even expect it to.
Oh sure, yeah, I wasn't making any kind of grand sweeping statement about all of anime or anything. It's just there is this little there is a chunk of it that is about this stuff.
Yeah,
of course. I don't think it's all that
and
way.
Some of it's even like self-referential.
Yeah.
I forgot what show was last season where it was basically like the whole show was like Tori Owana, you know, the comic book shop.
Right. Yeah. Dengeki.
Yeah. And I enjoyed watching that show, and that was just straight up like a show about lots of hentai and stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But interestingly, like, I feel like the most doujinshi that gets produced, like, I mean, you see the trends, right? So you'll know like what's the most popular thing because there's a mountain of porn comics for it.
Definitely. I don't know if you've heard of a character named Hestia this season, but she's
no,
gonna be pretty
tell me more.
Well, it's actually really interesting. She's like this god, and she's got boobs, and there's a ribbon.
Yeah. I would imagine that if you'd kept going with the doujinshi stuff, your site would be 40% Hestia by volume. before
yeah,
too long here.
And Konkola and Toho, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that stuff, and then, you know, like the key shows seem to get like a lot of it. So it's an interesting way to track popularity, is to look at how much porn.
It's one of our strengths too, and we sort of get to see what's popular among our users, because, you know, we're up to like 1.2 billion page views a month, yeah, and around 12 million unique visitors. So like the amount of people coming to Faku and reading stuff, you know, we could look at that and say, okay, this artist is popular, we should go down and do this genre, which we'd echoed in the books we've published so far. I think our first book was just straight vanilla, you know, straight romantic stories. And that was because it's the most popular thing on Faku. And also it's a really awesome artist, Homunculus, and one of my favorite books. So we get to sort of look at that, and use that data to, we echo it back to Japan as well. We say, hey, you know, this artist is really, really popular in the West. You know, maybe you should, you know, do some more stuff with them.
Right. So, I mean, you mentioned sort of watching trends and everything like that. You keep talking about, you know, artists you really like. Is it mostly the art for you, or are you operating under the pretense that I'm reading this for the story? I mean, are you ever reading it for the story?
In fact, I pretty much exclusively read hentai for the stories these days. When I first started, it was like my requirements were, okay, there's Asuka in it. All right, I'm going to fap to this. And it sort of grew into like, okay, I need something else. You know, I want a plot. I want some character development. And I think that's one of the really interesting things about hentai, and one of its strengths, and especially when compared to Western pornography, is like it's like really, really sex positive, I think, in the way it develops characters and the way the stories play out. There's also, you know, the extreme opposite of that, where it's just like tentacles and rape and, I don't know, poop and stuff. But for the most part, it's very positive, and there's good stories.
When you're selecting books, I mean, you mentioned the phrase sex positive. I assume when you say that, you mean sex positive also for the female characters in the book.
Yeah.
And when you're selecting a book, is that something you take into consideration? Are you trying to publish things you think promote maybe a healthy attitude about sexuality and towards women?
Absolutely. We do publish things that aren't in that vein, but it is a choice that we intentionally make to publish things that hit every genre and every spectrum. And
Well, I mean, you mentioned that like the stereotype of this stuff is, oh, it's tentacles and crazy stuff. But honestly, like the stereotype now is that it's all just hideously full of rape, garbage attitudes about women, regressive stuff that's, you know, really nasty. And that is certainly, there's plenty of that stuff, and that's the stereotype. So you're saying, like, when you're selecting what to publish, you're kind of moving away from that. But obviously you won't be able to get away from it entirely, because you're going to publish, you know, these anthologies, which are chock-a-block with that kind of thing.
it's definitely something we want to touch on. You know, we want to publish, because that image of hentai is bad, obviously, and it's bad for hentai because hentai isn't just people getting raped, and you know, it certainly goes both ways too. I've seen some things over the years, man, but it goes the other way where it's like, you know, men on the other side of that.
And, oh yeah, well, BL is, geez, you want to talk about rape? Like that's.
But you know, it is something we're conscious of. But at the same time, we're going to publish everything, and we're not going to be. We're not going to self-censor ourselves, and we're not going to censor the content that we publish. In fact, our third book was written by a female, QV, and in fact, about 20 or 30% of hentai artists in Japan are female.
Right.
There's a huge amount of females involved in this industry in Japan.
But at the same time, I mean, it puts you in kind of a rock and a hard place, because you can't really afford, I mean, do you feel like you can afford to be super conscious, like socially, about pornography? I mean, won't it sort of hurt your image with your consumer base if you're too interested in, look, we're only interested in publishing sex positive pornography that has healthy depictions of women enjoying sex? Like, you can't.
That's certainly not the path that we would take, because I firmly believe that you should be able to read and produce and draw and write anything, as long as no one was hurt in the process of producing it. So, and that goes for anything, you know, a comic book, a book, hentai, whatever. So we're going to publish everything. The fact that we also get to publish some sex positive books with, you know, strong female characters and even dominating female characters is a bonus. But in general, you know, we're going to publish it all.
At the same time, you also have maybe a little bit of a cover on this, and not necessarily a cover. I think this is a legitimate argument to make. Everything you're publishing is just drawings. Mm-hmm. You aren't publishing anything that involves real people. And I've had these arguments a lot over the years about what's appropriate and what isn't. And I've always felt that hentai like manga and doujinshi and stuff, it was on a level removed from live action stuff, because even if you have porn stars and actors who obviously willing proud of their jobs, love what they do, sure, there's plenty of those people, but there's a lot of exploitation in that industry too. Like, there's a lot of problems with the way porn actors are treated and what the kind of garbage that they're put through. There's abusive practices, there's exploitative practices. What you're dealing with has none of those problems. It's just drawings. And I think that's a really strong argument you can make in favor of, like, look, yeah, okay, this stuff is kind of gross. It gets into some, attitudes about women and stuff that you're not going to agree with. But it is just a drawing. Mm-hmm. And there's no actual people being harmed in the process of making this. You don't have, like, a porn actress who's being treated like an indentured servant to a producer or anything like that. None of that shady stuff going on. It's just somebody putting pen to paper. I mean, Obviously that... So does that help you maybe, sleep a little easier at night? Is that something you sort of rely on as a fallback to, like, maybe one of the reasons you don't consider yourself to be a pornographer, so to speak?
Like, we just put out a book called Hanafuda by this incredible artist named Okama. He did character designs for the Evangelion movies. He did, I don't know if you've ever seen those cute figures, the Asuka and Eva figures where they have, like, the fruits, or the ones where they're the witches. He did those.
Yeah.
He's been on television numerous times in Japan. He put out this book called Hanafuda, and it's this supernatural tale of this sort of like this rich guy who gets married, or he's going to be getting married to this very rich, beautiful woman. And something happens, she gets kidnapped by demons, and he's going after the demons to get revenge, essentially. And on the way, he meets this fox who can transform or shapeshift. And he's like, can you shapeshift into my wife? And she does. And it's a very... So straight up, it's, it's very Lolly-esque type book. And there's a chapter in it where Izuna has his name. He comes across, I don't want to spoil the story.
It's all right.
There's a chapter in it where one of the characters comes across another character who is, straight up abusing a child sexually. And the immediate response of the main character in the scene is revulsion, and he transforms into a beast and just bites this guy's head off. And I am so incredibly proud of the fact that we were able to publish this book that shows, a lot of extremely controversial stuff, and get it out there in front of people, because this book in particular is honestly a work of art. It's a beautiful, beautiful book by this incredible artist. So I'm really proud of it. And I sort of went off on a tangent there. And
No, it's okay. I mean, it's fascinating to me to hear you talk about this stuff, because you clearly appreciate it from an art perspective. And you've mentioned that again and again, that you were a fan of these artists. Do you feel, I think maybe it's the obvious answer to this question, but do you feel like erotic art in particular is unfairly marginalized, and that people should maybe pay more attention to it as an art form?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't know if it's marginalized. There's certainly a lot of people, even just on Faku, there's a lot of people just reading on Faku. But yeah, I think hentai is a bad rap. Because like you said, these days it's people assume it's abusive towards women. All hentai is written with, like, rape and rape-lay shit and all that kind of stuff. And back in the day, when I was coming into it, it was like, oh, hentai is all tentacles and, whatever the popular thing was back then.
And right. Yeah.
When we first started doing panels at conventions, we pitched it as, we want to change the perception of hentai. So our very first panel at Anime Boston, like, 6 years ago, it was a very informative panel where we were trying to dispel this opinion and viewpoint that hentai was just bad stuff. Since then, it's sort of grown into a really fun panel. But yeah, that's always sort of been my goal, to change the perception, this bad perception that hentai has. And that's why I very purposefully put my face on it, because I didn't want everyone to look at hentai and think it was some twisted thing that only some, you know, messed up person would be into, because it's not. It's just porn, and everyone should be free to sort of explore whatever sort of fetish they're into. Again, as long as no one is being hurt in the production of it.
Right. So the big sort of other elephant in terms of the stereotype is the other unfortunate stereotype of manga hentai right now is that it's full of stuff that is designed to appeal to pedophiles. It's full of lolicon material, which I'm sure you're familiar with. What is your attitude towards that material? Are you going to be avoiding it? I think, you know, just speaking person to person, maybe it, legally for you, it's a good idea to be avoiding that stuff completely, given the country you live in. But how do you, what's your stance on that stuff?
If we come in contact with lolicon, we're going to publish it. And really? This is very controversial, obviously.
Yeah, sure is.
The very first thing I did when we got this publishing deal, because I'm fully aware of the content that's out there, you know, I reached out to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund and I said, hey, you know, we're going to start publishing hentai. The time will come where we're confronted with, you know, here's one lolicon chapter in a book. Do you choose to censor it? Do you choose to remove it? Or do you choose to release it? And, you know, through conversations with them and conversations with lawyers and everything else, we decided that we're going to publish it. And we relocated to Oregon, actually, because at least in Oregon. And first off, I think lolicon is legal in the United States. There's certainly been cases where it was tied on to actual pedophilia and child pornography cases, which is obviously fucked up. But again, I see this as an art more than anything, and I always have. And I would stand by that opinion, you know, forever, that it is just art. And in a way, you could even think of it as sort of offensive that, you know, you're giving the rights of a child to this drawing of a child, you know. It's sort of like if I drew a picture of me murdering someone, is that equivalent to murder? Obviously it's not, but, you know, it's sort of like, if we go down that path where it's like courts and the government start judging art for its content and not just accepting that it's art, I think that's really bad. So again, in Oregon, which is where we're established right now, obscenity laws were deemed unconstitutional within the state. But federally, I think that it's okay. I have put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I mean, are you worried? Are you scared at all of the feds? I mean, because they take joy in taking people like you down. Like, that's a thing. There's a task force just for that.
Yeah, I mean, am I afraid of... I'm not afraid of it because I honestly, this is what I believe. I believe it's art, and I believe that art should be protected regardless of the content, and I think that some people, and it's fine to think that, you know, there's a lot of hentai that I find to cross the line, and I look at it and I reel back, you know. But I feel like that art is art and it shouldn't be censored. And right. That's something that, you know, day one, that's something that I sort of decided the direction that Faka would go in. None of our books have ever had a chapter released or a chapter removed. You know, if it's a brother and sister in there or something like that, they're going to stay a brother and sister. If it's, you know, a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old, they're going to stay a 16 and 17-year-old. So, yeah.
I guess it's sort of a, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it. Like, yeah. Sort of no half measures.
Yep, pretty much.
Right. Well, just do yourself a favor. Make sure your books are squeaky clean.
Yeah.
Because if they target you...
Yeah, I wouldn't want them to come at us from some angle like that.
And they just want to take you down. Oh, they will.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So the other question I have before we get to the Twitter questions here is, I'm curious, do you keep track of your demographic information?
Yeah, absolutely. We have so we use like Google Analytics and things like that. They give us a rough estimate. Over the years, we've ran some polls like, you know, how old are you? Are you a male or female? That kind of stuff.
And who is your customer?
Our customer is, you know, a young adult, male or female. About 30-35% of our users are female. I attribute it to the, you know, a lot of our, you, in general, the content on Faku is pretty tame. You know, it's not, it doesn't get too ridiculous. But yeah, it's a young adult, male, female, probably over the age of 18, I hope.
Yeah. Well, legally you're covered on that one, I think.
Yeah. And, probably early 20s. And we see that a lot at conventions. Because, you know, we'll do our panels at Anime Expo and there's like 1,000 people in the room and we see like people from all over the place and we see, you know, older people, we see younger people, we see males, females, we see people flying from other countries. We see it's really cool.
Yeah. And so you're saying, so your typical Faku user sounds like about 70% male, 30% female, and in their about early 20s.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Lots of college kids.
Yeah, lots of college kids and lots of kids who grew up on Toonami, you know, and things like that. Like, I love that Toonami sort of created, or I attribute Toonami, at least with me becoming an anime fan, so.
The Venn diagram of your users and Chan culture, how close is that to a perfect circle?
It used to be a perfect circle. There came a point where it started to deviate. You know, I very purposefully kept Faku not on the extreme end of the spectrum where it's like, you know, murder and snuff and stuff like that.
People going for shock value, yeah.
Yeah. And as a result of that, I decided that Faku wouldn't be anyone can upload anything. So it's always been, there's like, I don't know, 20 or 30 people who have privileges to upload things. They're very specific people from different scanlation groups and from different parts of the community. So the content, it gets uploaded a lot slower, or not slower, but less of it gets uploaded because it's too, like, you know, it's on these people to upload stuff. And, you know, I sort of stepped away from uploading quite some time ago. And as a result, other websites have popped up where it's like, you know, a fire hose of new content where you can go on and fap to 20 different things an hour, which is good. And I, you know, I think that's a good thing. But yeah, as we've deviated towards a more selective side of things, we've deviated away from Chan culture.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, I grew up on 4chan, certainly on A. You know, I've been on a user of 4chan since before I made Faku. And I think there is a lot of value in the community there, especially on the anime and manga board. But at the same time, there's also a lot of destructive opinions on there as well, which I think that I hope us as a community and me being part of that community, we kind of grow out of that. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, that's why I asked the question. It's more that Chan culture is big enough to the point where you can grow a business catering to it.
Yeah.
And that's really what that question was about, was whether or not you attributed your business success to being part of and catering to a subset of Chan culture, or if stepping away from that, and it sounds like stepping away from that and curating it opened your site up to a larger audience?
Yeah, I would say so. I've always been really focused on the United States specifically and our users here. But it turns out that they're, you know, the audience is huge all around the world, and that should be obvious. But our user base does not overlap very much with the Chan communities anymore.
All right. Okay. Okay.
Some good questions, man.
We got some, well, thank you. We got some Twitter questions here for you. Gia Pet asks, she's curious if you can break down anything about the percentage of men on the site that read BL or Yaoi and the women reading the het stuff.
Yeah, so we could. I've never done it.
You should.
We should. That would be really interesting. I find a lot of my female friends are actually into sort of like the femdom side of hentai,
mm-hmm.
The users there, which I think is super interesting. And there are definitely a lot of dudes who are into the, you know, the yaoi and the boys love and the being dominated by females, which is really cool. And again, is really different from, you know, a typical Western pornography where it's like a, you know, a delivery man with a pizza and his penis pops out of it or something like that.
Yeah, right. Well, the canard that women don't like porn is just absurd. It's it's just an old stereotype. It's not true.
Yeah, not at all. Everybody faps.
Yep. Okay. And actually, to that question, are you going to be publishing Yaoi?
Yeah, I think that we will. We have no plans right now just because we sort of have a, you know, we have our next, we have a good amount of books planned out already, and then we're starting the magazine. So it'll be a while before we get to it, but absolutely. And Bara as well. And, you know, there's no genre that I wouldn't publish if given the opportunity.
Interestingly enough, like the stuff you're going into, you know, hetero porn is basically untapped in the U.S., but the Yaoi stuff, there are several companies that publish that.
Yeah, so. There are. And you know, they've definitely sort of flooded the market a bit as well with,
that's a different fight on that front.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't read Yaoi, so I can't speak to the quality of it, but I know that there's a lot of it. And, you know, I'll walk into a Barnes and Noble and I'll see some and I'll be like, huh.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd stock our books, though.
Yeah, yeah. It weirds me out when I go to a Barnes & Noble and there's, like, hardcore gay manga smut sitting there, not shrink-wrapped.
Yeah, no.
Sitting there and you're like, wait, you know, the social, like, American culture makes it so that everyone in here, except me, because I know what it is blind.
Yeah.
They don't even know it's here.
Like, yeah, like, I look at that, too, actually. I was at a bookstore the other day, and I was like, I opened up a Yaoi manga that wasn't wrapped, and there was a dick going into a butt, and I was like, anyone could have picked this up. I'm like, did the, you know, the buyer of the bookstore just not realize, like, or what?
No, they're totally blind to it. It's kind of funny. All right. Slayer Rapier asks, wants to know if there's a chance of any bundles coming. I guess sort of buying a bunch of books at once. Maybe that's what he means.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think our first bundle will probably be a vanilla bundle. So vanilla is this genre, and it's a term that not Faku, but sort of the Western culture sort of coined, where it's just, you know, romantic, normal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we published what I consider to be the three best vanilla artists in Japan: Homunculus, Hisatase, and Napata. So once Napata's book comes out, I think we'll do a bundle with them. On Valentine's Day, we did a sale where all of our books were half off, and we broke our previous sales record pretty substantially. I think we sold a couple thousand books in like less than 24 hours, which is really cool for us because, you know, we are the distributor, the printer, the retailer. So it's really awesome when we do things like that. So yes, bundles.
Okay. And he also wants to know about the chance of potential releases showing up more at Right Stuff.
Yeah, I know Right Stuff has Renai Sample right now, our first book, but they'll be getting the rest of ours. Right now our books are, all of them are on Amazon, and most of them are on J-List, and obviously they're all on Faku. But yes, we'll get Right Stuff some copies.
Okay. Lindsay, who is our interest feed editor, asks if you plan on keeping the catalog diverse. She thinks so far what you've brought out is kind of formulaic. You just sort of swap out the character designs.
Yeah, we're going to be diverse. Some of our upcoming books definitely are like nothing that we've published before. And once we start simul-publishing the magazines, you know, that will just be a whole bunch of different genres every single month. And what's really cool about once we start the magazines is, you know, there's probably 20 or so chapters in a given magazine. You know, maybe a third of them will be new artists that haven't been published before. And of those 20 chapters, only like 4 or 5 might have been scanlated ever. Like,
right.
So the fact that we'll be doing the entire magazine, regardless of the content, and regardless of the artist, I think is going to open up a lot more, you know, maybe fetishes and genres and artists.
Okay. Because of Reviews asks, any plans for the future of your sponsored Smash player?
Yeah. So that, are you, did you see all that?
I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
That blew up pretty hard. I guess, yeah, we're going to do a lot more. We actually just, as of a day or two ago, sponsored another. This is a female league player, and she seems pretty awesome. So we're going to do more with game sponsorship. And again, that's just all of us are, you know, nerdy guys and girls at FAKU, and we love video games and we love anime. And if sponsoring some people who like the same things that we do is just something I want to do, because I want to encourage that, you know?
Right.
So yeah, we'll do more with Coastward for sure.
Okay. XP Sane asks, how hard is it or was it to get your Japanese partners to allow you to release digital copies alongside the print copies?
That was pretty interesting. Those side of the negotiations, because like I said, what we're doing is unprecedented. We're publishing the paperback worldwide outside of Japan. And we're publishing the digital editions of the same books that we publish worldwide. And we're publishing them uncensored, and we're publishing them with no DRM. So we can do, you know, we can just put it out there. And it was definitely a conversation like, you know, this is what people want. And if you, as the publishers and artists, want this to be a success and not just, you know, the thing that people make fun of as an excuse to pirate, you need to give people exactly what they want. And they were receptive to that, and we were able to get exactly what we wanted, which was cool.
Okay. I mean, do you have any kind of breakdown in terms of the sales for, like, you know, how many people are buying the digital versus the physical?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And, you know, when we first started putting out the books, I tried out a few different distribution methods. So our first book, we released the digital all at once. In the second book, we released like one chapter like a month ahead of time as like a pre-order thing. Mm-hmm. And then we started releasing things like on a schedule. So pre-order the book and first chapter will come out this day, second chapter this day, etc. And what we saw was that more and more people are buying digital. Paperback sales are still awesome, but I really was cognizant of warming people up to, it's okay to spend money on a digital hentai, you know, because no one has done that before. And you know, it's that whole argument, oh, why would I pay for porn? Well, here's a reason why you should pay for porn. So getting people familiar with that was one of my goals.
Okay. Yeah, that's a tough sell, maybe. Harder for you, I think, than a lot of other folks. Mouse in House asks, would FAKU ever consider joining forces with people behind Western hentai anthologies like Smut Peddler?
Yeah, I think that, yes, first off. I think that there's a lot of great artists in the West who just haven't had an opportunity. Like, in Japan, you know, if you're a hentai artist or you're an adult artist, there's sort of a path you can follow to success, you know, get published, get a book, etc. And that doesn't necessarily exist as easily here. And I would love, and one of my goals is certainly to create that path to success, so the artist can sort of grow into, you know, doing adult comics and getting what they deserve out of producing awesome stuff. So yeah.
All right. Lacuna Craft asks, are you thinking about doing a monthly subscription thing to read a la carte, you know, like Crunchyroll?
Yep. And that's our next big thing.
Okay. All right. Let's see here. Hazukari asks, how hard is it to legitimize a website that's main focus is unlicensed material based on anime, manga, and video game properties? So the question really is, moving forward as you go into legal only, I mean, are you going to be able to publish legally any doujinshi?
Doujinshi specifically, so something based on an existing property?
Yeah.
Right now, we don't have any plans to start doing that, simply because, you know, I'm also not really sure the legality necessarily of, you know, you publish a Naruto yaoi or something like that. From what we can observe, you know, there are plenty of artists who are selling parody works and selling parody comics of existing properties in the United States. Mm-hmm. And if you were to use that as a basis, then yeah, we could. I think we'll probably experiment with it in some very unique cases over the next year or so.
Okay.
And we'll kind of see what happens.
Somebody, because Japan asks, if you've thought about working with individual doujin circles and creators to make print-on-demand hard copies of translated doujinshi.
That's a cool question. So our first venture into that is bringing Boshi to Anime Expo and having one of his doujinshi available, or one of his doujins available at the convention. So he's basically giving us one of his doujinshis. We're going to translate it into English, and it's going to be uncensored, and then we're going to print it here and make it available at the convention. And it's going to be Japanese style. You know, it's going to be picking up a Japanese doujinshi, but it will be in English. And that's going to be our first test to kind of see how that goes over. So yeah, I think that would be really cool. And we are talking with individual artists too on other things. So we have another line of products that we're putting out, which is just us and the artist working together, which is really cool.
Okay. All right. Firquin Root asks, what's the line you draw on what's put on the site? Do you have like a hard line where like, okay, we will go as far as this kind of content, but not this kind of content?
So there is a line at basically ToddlerCon, which is like the extreme, extreme, extreme of Ollycon. Like that won't ever be on Faku.
Okay.
And it is sort of hypocritical of me, especially with, you know, my stance on freedom, but we won't have that on Faku at any time. And right now we don't have any guru stuff. It's not because of a rule or anything. It's just, again, it's sort of based on what the uploaders upload. When I first made Faku, it was just me uploading for the first like year or two. So it was me uploading the things that I like to read. And as a result, our core like user base grew from my own interests, which were very vanilla, very traditional. Mm-hmm. So our core user base is people who are into that. So as a result, a lot of the content on Faku is like that.
Well, I would imagine too, it's one of those things where if you have like hardcore guru images like on your front page to advertise that you're selling it, the person going there for the vanilla stuff is going to get turned off and go away.
Yeah,
because there's someone being disemboweled on the front page, and that's not what they're there for, right?
Yeah, no, I remember the first one of the first manga that I was reading, which made me stop and like walk away from my computer for a period, was it was some hentai where right when they would be having sex or whatever, right as they climax, they would like kill each other. And I remember a scene where like one of them had a samurai sword and just chopped the other person's head off right in that moment. And I remember reading this and just like I don't know, it just like messed with my head, and I had to like walk away. So we would be stupid to not be aware of what the majority of our user base is interested in.
Yeah, well, it sounds like what you've sort of decided on is that largely your content is going to be vanilla, and from there forward you will sort of explore and see what else there is. What will actually do business, I guess, now that you're moving into that territory. Now you have to curate even further down to what's going to sell.
Yeah, and it's actually interesting because the two most popular genres on Faku are vanilla and Netorare and NTR, mm-hmm. which is the exact opposite of vanilla.
Right. Yeah.
So they're both actually like fairly equally popular. NTR is when there'll be a couple, like a boyfriend and girlfriend, and then a third character will come in and steal one of them away. You know, and like, you know, it's like cuckolding.
Right.
And that is equally as popular as vanilla, to be honest. So
which, from what
it's
I understand,
cool.
is incredibly popular as a result of it being popular in Chan culture, right? Like, that's where that comes from? Like, the etymology of that fetish? Like, in terms of it becoming more popular on sites like yours as a result of it growing in prominence on, like, 4chan?
I don't know if I would attribute it to 4chan. You know, 4chan sort of made it a joke to be like, oh, you're a cuckold, you know,
right.
Oh, you're into blah, blah,
blah.
They're
obsessed. They're kind of obsessed with the idea, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, me personally, I like, you know, if I read an NTR story, I'll actually read it for the story. You know, I like reading something and feeling an emotion. And a lot of the NTR stories will make you feel like, you know, sadness or you know, like rage or anger or love or whatever else. And I like stories that are able to do that to me personally. So I hope that that's why people are into it.
So anything they can get an emotional reaction out of your pornography deadened heart. That's what you're
exactly
saying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Warm these ice cold hearts.
I'm joking, of course. All right. Finally, he also asks, do you have any plans to produce or officially license Aerogay?
yes, we have. I have some thoughts on it. Yes. Can't go too far into it. In regards to Aerogay, I think Jast is doing the best job. There's Jast and Manga Gamer, right? Those are the two big names right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw Little Witch Romanesque recently came out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm aware. Yeah.
And I played it, and I played it like straight for like a week. It was an awesome, awesome game, and I was so impressed with Jast putting out that game because that is a game that has straight lolicon elements as well, and they didn't shy away from it. And normally they would with some past releases, and in this one it was, you know, they put it all out there. So I was really, really impressed by that. And at least in terms of Aerogay right now, I want to help elevate companies like Jast and Manga Gamer, who I think are doing a really good job in that sphere. And then there's things like Honey Pop, which came out, which was surprisingly a lot of fun. So yeah, the game scene I think is really cool. I think it's going to grow a lot, visual novels and Aerogay in the West. And it's about time. You saw the Clannad Kickstarter recently that Sakai Project did? Like, seeing that blew me away. Seeing that Key worked with Sakai Project to, like, release Clannad in English, that's just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing with that is, the question is, well, that's the biggest one. So can anything else even hope to match that? Is it an indicator that there's a big market here for that stuff? Or is it just Clannad's really popular? I guess it remains to be seen. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
But yeah. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us. Best of luck to you in your endeavor to become a legitimate business.
thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks. It was a lot of fun coming on, and thank you everyone for the questions.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating, a review. We would really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.